It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we're joined here today with two people that are fighting the Bayou Bridge pipeline in Louisiana. We're going to be talking to them about the campaign, about what they've been doing over the past couple months to fight this pipeline, what's in store for them in the coming period, and also how we can support what's been going on there. So just to introduce yourselves, can you just talk about who you are? And how you got involved in frontline environmental defense, the anti-pipeline movement, and what you're doing in Louisiana.
Hi, my name is Neshoba. I come from the United Homa Nations tribe, which is a tribe that is native to this land here in Louisiana. I guess how I got involved in all of this was like being up in North Dakota. And, I mean, this is the end of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and it's in my home, so. And it's going through my tribe and the other tribes that are going to be affected down here, my relations land, so kind of have to, obligated.
And I am another member of Loy Lavie Camp. I originally got involved with organizing when I was doing quote-unquote disaster relief or storm relief, and then I got involved in anti work and environmental racism work, and now I'm here opposing this pipeline.
Great, thanks for sharing. So can you tell us about the pipeline that you were fighting, what areas does it stand to impact? How will it impact Native communities? What will its effects be, both from the construction but also the implementation on the environment, the land, and also the people around it?
It's going through the Atchafalaya Basin and Bayou Lafourche, and what?
Well, it's going through 700 bodies, or their proposed route would be through 700 bodies of water, including the Atchafalaya Basin, which is our basin that goes into the Gulf, and is so crucial to us in what we eat with crawfish and shrimp, and economy, how we make our livelihoods, and it's also like a storm buffer for the whole continent or country. In that, like, when these storms come in, these tropical storms, the wetlands are there to soak in that storm water. And when they destroy and disrupt the wetlands, and we're already losing a football field every hour, there isn't that buffer. There's so much mass flooding. And then another important water source that it would be crossing through would be Bayou Lafourche,
which is my tribe's of drinking water. I mean, it's also like where that provides like economical stuff too. I find a lot of what all of this is affecting is like a spider's web, and if you damage one thing, then the whole thing collapses because we're so connected. Just Louisiana in general is just so, and the people that live in Louisiana are really connected through the land via water, because we all use the seafood either as a funds to make money or to provide for our families for food.
Yeah, and the crawfish is a an animal that would be really affected by this, and they're also a sacred animal.
Mm-hmm. And that's on the camp's logo, right? I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it is. It's the sacred animal of the United Homa Nation, like on the Homa logo. That's the waterways that it would be affecting. And then,
I mean, that animal's more than just sacred to my tribe. It's sacred to so many people, even if they don't see it as that word, sacred. I mean, we all eat it, and we all use it in our lives. Like, I mean, it's we're going to be going into February soon, so then everyone's going to be thinking Mardi Gras and crawfish boils, right?
Yeah.
And I think Mardi Gras is a ceremony all on its own.
And then there's also the communities that this affects. The part of the pipeline they want to build is from Lake Charles to St. James, but in reality, or like what people around here called St. James is Freetown, and it's a town established by people who freed themselves from slavery. It put in oil refineries and pipelines, and you know, that area we call Cancer Alley is already ravished by the extraction industry. And this is another pipeline that is just kind of like a further kick in the gut to some communities.
I think it was about a month ago, there was a huge spill that happened, you know, within the ground. I think it was the Keystone XL started to leak, and there was just stuff everywhere. I mean, like the Dakota Access Pipeline construction has already leaked. I mean, when people see that and they think about the effect on, as you said, like a web of connection, and also to the water and everything that people need to serve, you know, to live off of. I mean, what's the response from the various communities of people on the ground to the threat of, you know, pipelines and all everything that comes with that?
You know, I think it really varies. There's people here that are like really concerned, and then there's people here like it's always been going on. So what's going to change it? And then there's some people that are like, well, how do we do this?
Right.
And then there's also people that are like, we need the oil for like to help ourselves, like to get money and stuff. So it's very much a lot of different things. I mean, like so many people from my tribe work in the oil company, and we just have a history and the more I learn about the history of my tribe, the more I realize like why we work for the oil companies.
Well, can we talk a little bit about who is building this pipeline? You mentioned this is the end of the Dakota Access Pipeline, but who are the major players involved? Who's pushing this thing?
Yeah. Do you want to speak to that?
Energy Transfer Partners.
The same behind the Dakota Access Pipeline. The company with the number one spill record and the worst record for human rights abuses because of what happened at Standing Rock, because of the way that the military the paid mercenaries, the pipeline militias, that Energy Partners was paying, used physically, mentally, water protectors. Mm-hmm. And just citizens and stakeholders, the way they bully people. So many people around here are bullied by these pipeline companies, and so many neighbors and now, you know, friends we've been able to use this camp as a resource for all of us to share that information, and we're hoping to avoid evil companies like this coming in in the future by helping people know their rights and staying informed, because a lot of people on this pipeline route were bullied into a $10 easement for miles and miles of pipeline under their, you know, the lands where their kids play on, and they grow food, and they grow food to sell to us.
When you say a $10 land, easement, what does that mean?
So an easement is like, In layman's term, they're basically asking for permission to put something in the land. But uh-huh. It would still be land that the person would, like, we continue to own it legally, you know.
It's like a use fee or something.
Yeah, a use fee. And then they promise that they'll upkeep it, but of course we never see them again. And when there's leaking, it's the homeowners that notice it.
And the homeowners that have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, like, in this area, if something like that would be going through, like, as I'm looking at these rice fields, would go through a rice field and leak, that's just going to kill. Like, I mean, the rice won't grow. The crawfish won't grow. It's not like you can just clean that stuff up or just find a magical way to stop it. And it's not like these homeowners are, like, have the means to be able to figure, like, not, like, they don't have or the money to be able to, like,
yeah,
find resources or to be able to fix it, you know? And I think that's really mm-hmm. how pipeline companies and, like, other companies, like, fracking and uranium mining, like, do what they do.
Well, let's turn now to the campaign. How did the campaign to stop the pipeline get off the ground? And also, how did the encampment itself start?
This movement to stop this pipeline has existed as long as the proposed pipeline has existed. And it was happening, like, both of us were at Standing Rock when the pipeline was proposed. But all of our friends, all the landowners, the fishermen that are involved, the crawfishermen, the people from Freetown, we've all been organizing for as long as the pipeline has been proposed, going to hearings, and we've formed a coalition of different communities opposed to the pipeline. And today, one of the results of that community is our camp. That's like a community mm-hmm. that's less of like an encampment and more of like a group of people committed to like opposing this pipeline in an indigenous tradition, specifically. Yeah, you have anything to say? There were a lot of people involved in a camp who asked for an environmental impact statement from the Army Corps and from the governor and from the company, Energy Transfer Partners. To even just the idea that we have to ask for an environmental impact study over land that is so fragile and falling just struggling so much right now.
It shouldn't have to be like pulling teeth like how it's been.
I mean, it was,
yeah.
There was such a display of like, just ignoring us and only treating us like criminals. As soon as anybody starts to propose, like we have a friend that, called into the governor, or like this person only became our friend because she was hurt like this, but was calling into the governor and was asking questions, and they accused her of like being a part of our camp, and they were like, oh well, you're friends. So then she reached out to us, so like assuming that we're like, they assume that we're all in some kind of conspiracy against them, when in reality it's like all of us have come to the conclusion that this is, that we don't want this.
We don't need it.
We don't need it. We don't want it. And it hurts us. So.
Right. If it hurts the land.
So many people are doing so many different things to oppose the pipeline. And we're only one group.
Can you talk a little bit about how that coalition kind of came together? Just, you know, how it all kind of came, and then now there's people that are on the land working to stop this. Can you just talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, so our, like, a woman that's been very important to this, Cherie, our, like, Camp Mama.
I was going to say that too.
Our mom rad. That's what I said.
Mom rad. That's awesome.
She and several other like women that are stakeholders. Are another hero of mine, Eve, who's from Freetown, and a woman named Anne from New Orleans came together, and we were trying to share resources. And a lot of people have been building together and working together because of all of the environmental oppression that people in the Gulf South deal with. So in some respects, we did all have connections, but often those connections are like wealthy white NGO types. And I think passing the mic back to stakeholders and changing the conversations and making sure the platforms are there for the people that deserve it and the people that have been like so viciously ignored.
Well, I was hoping also we could talk about, there's been some pretty badass photos of a couple months ago of people floating, building floating blockades and stuff like that. I was wondering if you all could talk about that. How did that all come about?
Well, I mean, Louisiana has a lot of water.
We got a lot of water. And at first, we decided that the best... Because we're not, as I said, we're not like a large-scale occupation type thing. We're like people committed to stopping this pipeline who have a lot of stake in this fight. We thought that it would be good if we were movable. So we great, awesome blockades and, or not even blockades, flotation structures that we were like, you know, that were like livable.
I actually think that those structures remind me a lot of, I mean, I'm not saying that like my tribe structures were like floatable and we can live on them, but it reminds me a lot of like the indigenous people of this land. Moving from waterway to waterway, and it all connects. And I think there's like a lot of symbolism there, but then also like the pipelines going along the Chapalaya Basin. And
yeah. And we didn't want to be. We wanted to create a safe space for people that like are in high stakes situation, like these landowners and the people in these communities. And we thought that that would be a cool thing to do. Or it would be easier to do if we were movable, if we could go down bayous. And we are still doing that. Additionally, now, like, we're focusing on this beautiful, beautiful land that we can take care of. And it's, like, an easy way for all these land stakeholders to
a beacon.
Conjoin. Conjoin, not conjoin. That would be freaky. Could like confer and have space, you know, hold space together.
So recently there was a call for support and supplies of the encampment. Can you tell us more about what you're looking for in terms of support? Maybe somebody that's looking for this or listening to this and they want to get involved, they're in the local area. What are you all looking for in terms of supporting the resistance to this pipeline?
Okay, so we've got a few different sections. There's like, but the umbrella of it all is that we never want charity. We only want solidarity. We only want people working with us. And we want to be able to help people as well, help people that have a connection to this land or are indigenous to this land and need help, because this is a painful process. Like physical and in-kind donations is one category I guess we should get into. And then like sharing information and then being on ground. So let's do first.
One thing that we have had, we have lists already made for herbal supplies and medic supplies. We have lists of things that we're like looking for in camp on like a wish list.
And it's on our website.
Yeah, you can find it all on Facebook. And, like, if people could also share, like, our Facebook stuff, that would also be really helpful.
But, yeah, so we're doing herbal drive, and that's really all that we're trying to get people to send to us, because we don't want to waste a bunch of energy and, like, cardboard and plastic and stuff, with people like sending us a packet of batteries that we can go get. And in general, you know, like I mentioned that I do a lot of relief work. It's just so helpful when people give others the agency to decide what to do. So helping raise funds or helping us get the big things we need, some small boats, a truck would be helpful, things like that. But we don't really need people to send us like a bunch of old clothes and things like that. Like, we've got all that covered. So herbal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're building the community space right now. So we're building a kitchen and bathrooms and bunk rooms and things like that. But all of those things are things that, like, we want to have a relationship with the people that are coming on this land. And so if the person listening to this is feeling so called to, like, be here, or, like, whoever's listening to this, you know how you can, what you can contribute best. So that's why we really encourage people to, like, we're, like, totally open lines of communication, public way and an encrypted way, in whatever way makes you feel safe. And we can figure out how to work together to keep the people around here safe. And we have a, like, if you feel like you need to come to camp and you want to help us, like, an encrypted form for people to reach out to us if they don't have another option for reaching out. And then we also add zines. We have some zines that are made, and we have a printable section where people, like, if they want to distribute information, that's perfect. We need that too. Your grandma, start that conversation.
Yeah. Invite your grandma. You can't come, but your grandma can. Just kidding.
Well, what does support from the surrounding community look like that's being threatened with, you know, this pipeline coming in? How are people living around the area and impacted and hearing about this thing responding to the campaign itself?
Well, the people around us are really supportive. Like, the more we talk to the people, the more the people are, like, they're on our side, because they don't want this here either, you know?
None of us want it.
They just feel like, what else can we do? And now that we're, like, talking to them, they're like, okay, there's another way. It doesn't have to, like, be like this. And because, like, this will be affecting them directly, and it will affect everything, like, economically, like, food-wise, shelter-wise, everything. And I mean, I'm glad that we can communicate and, like, be on great terms and, like, be able to talk and get along with all of this stuff and help one another, because I think that's definitely what's needed, instead of, like,
mm-hmm.
we're not leaving them in the dark. They're just as a big part of this as, like, anything else.
And community members have really been opening up their doors. I don't want to, like, specifically or get into specifics, because I want to keep them safe. But like, in sure. so many aspects of the camp, we're working with everybody from around here all the time. Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been, like, police violence other than, like, the existence of the police being around us. Like, no direct violence.
Right.
So, yeah.
Is there an aspect of people scared of, like, you know, outside agitators, or, I don't know, they see something on TV about Standing Rock, about the police, or are they worried about that at all, or are they worried about some sort of outside influence of people coming and causing trouble? Is that something that you've had to deal with?
People are worried about the company being violent with them and the police being violent with them, and... I mean, some people, I haven't seen this very much, like, along the pipeline route, but other people, maybe because they aren't directly impacted in this way, are worried about, you know, they want, is this that kind of thing? But, like, I'm proud to say that I think we've worked on these relationships for a while. It's not like we're jumping in here. And
just doing all of this stuff without their, like, consent. We're talking to them, and we're working with them, and we're making sure that they're being heard.
And if they were afraid of thing. I think that, like, my personal goal is to just spread as much calm and, like, resolve as many things as we can. And them being fearful is something to resolve. And if there were, like, a large amount of people who were uncomfortable with something, like, they're a part of camp. They, you know, then we decide together. Like, that's what self-governance is about. So right now we don't have that. But yeah.
You both brought up Standing Rock. I'm just curious about your thoughts about the current state of however you want to describe it, the anti-pipeline movement, the fight against resource extraction, water protectors. It seems like there's a lot going on across the United States and both in so-called Canada, both the Native communities, people getting involved. I'm just curious your thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, I guess me just personally, it's like really empowering and really uplifting just being an Indigenous woman, witness happening. It's a really beautiful thing and it gives me hope for my children. I don't know. I'm glad it's happening though.
And I think we're strong right now. I mean, on one hand, resistance is always, you know, kind of gets stronger. Like, you know, there's definitely like an influx right now with Trump stuff this year. But in general, like as we move on from, as we not never move on, I mean.
As we heal from Standing
Rock. As we walk forward, as we continue to walk forward after what happened at Standing Rock. Like, I'm proud of, like, what we're all doing and the ways we're all connected and the ways we're organizing together. And I'm a part of this movement, and, like, everyone should come. Not everyone should come here, but everyone should, you know, like, if that's how they need to heal, yeah, like, just, there's so much shit going on right now, and...
And I think so much... I'm sorry.
No, I just think that, like, you know, good news and solidarity is important, and this fight has been really painful, and it's been an emotional roller coaster, but I'm just so proud of where we are, and I just want to keep doing, like, my ancestors and this, at least. How about you?
I mean, yeah, that's the whole reason why I'm doing all of this, like, the whole reason why I went to Standing Rock in the first place was because over 300 tribes from around the world were gathering, and I've never seen a gathering that large in my entire life, so I'm obligated to do this. Like, I have to do this, like, and I think that's something that some people in my family just don't understand, because they're like, you're Native, but all of that stuff happened a long time ago, and I'm just like, I'm Native, and I need to hold my ancestors as I will.
Continuing on the vein of talking about Standing Rock, I'm just curious... For you all that were so involved, what were the major takeaways for you from that? And how are they either like lessons or feelings? How are they being applied to what you're doing right now?
My major takeaways that I like feel comfortable telling anyone about would be like, I understand energy transfer partners and we understand the tactics they're using and we understand how they use them lazily, sloppily, everywhere, all the time. And we know the tactics they use and their evil tricks, and we're not fooled by it anymore. And another thing I've learned is like,
we're not scared of it either.
Yeah, like I'm not. I've learned not to carry fear, to like be proud of what we're doing, and to make good decisions, it's kind of hard to face me anymore. Like, if you're making me talk about me, like my takeaways were like, anything could happen. We have a pretty good idea of what could happen because we prepare, and, just like love on the people around us right now, because we're all like, it's just a fucking tough ride. And that Indigenous, I mean, I was an atheist. I was an atheist before Standing Rock, and then when I had 2 days and there was a large assault on camp, and I prayed, I'm like, I just I started believing in prayer and, like, in myself as, like, a tool for the creator and, like, a revolutionary, like, a, you know, oh, God, it's an embarrassing thing to talk about.
No.
Intense stuff.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, like, I agree with everything. I wasn't even thinking about that. Like, whenever my brain stopped working, and then whenever my brain clicked, and was just like, what did I carry with me out of camp? I carried ceremony, and then everything you were saying, like, yeah I carried that too, but, like, ceremony, and that's one thing that, like, I want sacred, like, this land is a sacred, safe space.
And is ceremony.
For all people, and just that, yeah, exactly, just that is ceremony. The indigenous people that are gathering on this land, like, people that were lost from the tribe and now finding us again, and, like, learning our history, it's healing, it's mm-hmm. healing not only, like, ourselves, but, like, these holes in our hearts that we've been feeling because, like, all of the pain that, like, our ancestors have felt, like...
Yeah. Indigenous resistance is ceremony. And I don't like the word, is it resistance, because it's so, like, oh, the boots on my back and we can't get up, but...
No, I think we can get up and stand up and walk.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's whenever we stand up and start... It's when, like, the people that want us to feel that way feel it on their back, and that's why they treated us the mm-hmm. way in camp or at Standing Rock, because they were scared that people could, like, come together and work together in ways, you know.
Surveyors are coming to the base camp tomorrow, as your Twitter said. What's all gonna go down? What's gonna happen?
We are going, well, they called and they were like, so what's your gate code so we can get in? We're like, we'll be here. We'll let you in. I mean, wow. They're just they're people who want to come work, like, do their surveying. Oh, God. Like, we have to make a group decision about what's going to happen, but what? Yeah, but, what ETP always does is send, like, the lowest on the totem pole to handle people because they don't respect anybody. So it's not like anybody that comes is going to, so often none of these people have an opinion on anything and they're just here and they're contributing.
Getting paid and they're just trying to provide for their families too.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, I don't know. We don't know what to say about it. It's, like, a lot of things like that just have to be, like, internal right now. But, yeah, they'll be here
too. Yeah.
And then, they're still waiting right now. Like, they just come with clipboards. They're waiting. Because they don't have all their permits. Not that they always wait, because they usually don't. And if we weren't all out here and everybody was so aware and resistant to this pipeline, they would probably... without their permits, but mm-hmm. yeah, they gotta wait.
Right. Well, as far as the campaign goes, what's next for you all in the foreseeable future? Where do you think the work will take you?
We're trying to like, currently with this pipeline, we're just seeing what they throw, and then we're handling it based on that, but we hope to be a permanent resource for landowners who need help, like, knowing about these pipelines, and community members and kids and families and tribal members. So that's our ultimate goal. And to keep watch over this company and to stop the company, mm-hmm. like, because the company is not serving any of us. So,
right.
You know, we're like, to stop Energy Transfer Partners in a way that would protect us.
Well, this is a question from Twitter. They're asking basically how is this campaign connecting people that are living in the area impacted by the pipeline construction to the actual resistance? We already kind of covered that.
Yeah. It's kind of just like that is the resistance, you know. The resistance wasn't created out of some, like, conspiracy against, any of this stuff. It was just people dealing with this for so long and exhausted with it and, like, tired of being tired. So, and it's something that I say the whole conspiracy thing because, you know, your group has covered some of the, like, legal action against people resisting companies like ETP and the ways that they, like, pretend that because me and my neighbor and the person that lives in the neighboring town and all of us, like, oppose a pipeline that we're, like, in some kind of grand conspiracy and, like, make the little guy out to be, like, the one having the conspiracy instead of the, like, multi-billion dollar company that, like, has so much evil in this world. It's it's so aggravating. Like, it's aggravating. Honestly, it's aggravating to be to have to be in danger about things like that. Just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. We're definitely by, of, and for the community.
And I'm really glad that the community, like, stands by. I'm glad we stand with each other.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was just looking on your Twitter feed today, and there was an article about some guy in Louisiana that was opposed to the pipeline, you know, big white guy with, like, a flannel shirt. I'm just curious, like, is this campaign kind of bringing different people that before maybe not have, you know, talked to each other or, you know, interacted, or were they already doing that before, like, you know, native and settler, rural, and maybe somebody living in a city? Is that kind of happening, or was that already happening before and this has just kind of accelerated it?
A lot of the indigenous people here aren't federally recognized, so it's not like we live on reservations.
That's Jody. He's a crawfisherman. Awesome. And people like that have been independently resisting things and have been badass, like, self-spoken, incredibly visionary, brave people for as long as they if I'm sure. And I'm glad that we have so many around us. And I think, like, facilitating us all communicating with each other and supporting each other and giving each other platforms has been a great thing. And then also, like, one of my personal goals has been, like something that's involved in that is, like, doing de-oppression work with people, because this country has divided us in so many ways that it's hard for us to work together. And, like, white people have a lot to learn in that regard and have a lot of, de-oppression work to do. And, and coming together, people of different, like, races and classes and genders, it, like, scary sometimes, but, like, such a healing process, I think. And, like, not involving ourselves. Like, we would never involve ourselves with somebody who is being oppressive.
Sure.
Because that's against the whole movement.
I mean, I feel like everyone that's, like, in that we've spoken with community-wise, like, we want it. It's not like there's any, like, we're just people communicating. We don't come from the same background, but we, like, we all, like, so many people in the community where we are at right now, like, they live off the land. They understand.
Yeah. And a lot of people from Freetown are Baptist. And we had, like, when we first did our first, like, opening camp, our good friend, Pastor Joseph, he did seem a little shocked, but then he was so respectful and understanding, and we all have so many, like, shared goals and so many things we hold sacred, and, like, what unites us all is this land and protecting it, and that's something we'll never argue about. You know, we all love crawfish, we all love this water and this land and the people,
and we all need it to survive. I mean, yeah, I think I already mentioned that, like, so many people in Louisiana live off of the water. It's just, we live off the land. It's how we get by. It's not like it's what's easier. It's just, like, it is what it is. It's how we were raised.
Sorry if that last question about the guy from your Twitter, the article was awkward. I was just like,
I'm not sure how to, like, I didn't know where you were coming from with that. And I was just like, what do you mean?
But I got what you meant. And I think it's like a really real thing that, whole concept of like being colorblind or whatever, and not caring about, like, not acknowledging the divisions that this state has put up so heavily.
Right.
Like, is dumb. And we are, like, the government and so many things do want to separate us, and it has been a journey to, like, tear down those walls and work together and feel safe doing it. So
yeah, I just meant that, like, most people would probably see his picture and be like, oh, this guy is probably like some dude in the South, he supports Trump,
yeah,
you know. But something like this is awesome because it's bringing all those, it's bringing different groups of people together, which I think is like why these pipeline fights are really exciting. Because even in if you look at Virginia, it's like these like struggles are happening in like super conservative, like, you know, areas, and people are going up against these big corporations. So, I mean, for liberatory struggles that, you know, are not a friend to capitalism in the state, I think that there's a huge potential for not only bringing people together, but, you know, really pushing like an anti-colonial, anti-racist politic, like while people are doing this organizing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah. That's the foundation of this. We're blessed with so many like good, trustworthy, defiant old white men somehow. It's like a lot of crawfishermen who are like old white men, just we love each other and we work together.
That's awesome.
And that's great. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, like not how it is. And you know, there are plenty of those old white guys in other places that are really not working with us. Not at all. But
yeah. Well, I think that's exciting in itself and gives hope for, the future of just life in general, that people can find a common humanity and not only fight back, but build something, you know, worth living for. I mean, that's what we're all working towards.
Yeah. And like trying to remember, like, who created these divisions, and was it people standing to us or on the other side of the fence, or was it somebody that's somewhere that we can't even see?